Blog Talk Radio.
Tell my baby, make it hot. Ride the cock till you hit the spot. Tell my baby, make it hot.
Doing it doggy style. Wow, 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 yippee-yo, yippee-yay, bow, wow, yippee-yo, yippee-yo. Wow, 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 yippee-yo, yippee-yay, bow, wow, yippee-yo,
And we're here. Professor Val checking in on Naked Soma Radio. Dr. Mark was just here. Hold on. I think he's coming back. And let's see. Are you there?
Kind of, sort of.
Yeah, there you are. You missed the theme.
Nah, screw it. Sick of the theme. I'm sick of most everything in this damn show.
Yes, I know.
Phone just dies basically to stop me from being here.
Mm-hmm. That was beautiful. I'm like, oh, look, he's on time. Son of a...
My phone just dies. Yeah. Welcome to Naked Soma, goddammit. Phone number here is 646-478-4847, and I'm grumpy.
You? Never.
Never.
God, I'm watching too much of that freaking show.
Yep. John Adams Marathon on Sunday on HBO, folks.
Starting at 2 p.m.
Yes, you can go through all 7 episodes of This Sapes Life. And if you don't off yourself and everyone in the room at the end, then you get a medal.
You know, I'm definitely going to be doing that, right?
What, watching the marathon?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, hopefully I'll be able to do or partake and not miss... any hockey.
Oh, come on.
I'm in hockey hell right now. The Rangers are up by 1, third period. Just began. I think they just called a penalty. I don't know. They sound off now.
This is a revolution, dammit. We're going to have to offend somebody.
Yep, they called a penalty.
Oh, man.
So we, what do you call it? Is my sound okay? Am I sound like I'm in a tunnel? Or?
No, you sound fine.
All right. Here's the devil's power play to tie it up. Make me miserable. So, did you hear about the dude that offed himself last night at Shea Stadium?
I did. That was awful.
36-year-old guy at the game with, I think, his nieces and his two daughters.
Yep.
His wife was home pregnant with their third kid. And I was just there on Sunday, so I could completely understand how he left the planet. You know, in high school and stuff, where you slide down the banister?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the escalator at Shea, oh, no, they're going to call another one. Right? The escalator at Shea has that sort of like flat little metal handrail that goes outside of the actual rubber one.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're, you know, particularly eco, you are tempted to kind of make a little ski run out of it. And at the end of the game, there's not enough people on the escalator, so of course you can get away with this. So who knows how drunk he was or whatever, but he fell basically the equivalent of one full story to the cement and didn't make it at the hospital. And
yeah, it sucks.
Yeah, I mean, I was there at 85 when another guy did the same damn thing. And we were there when it was just happening. And, you know, if you ever walked out of a doubleheader at Shea Stadium, you're not exactly feeling like yourself. You see just a whole mishmash going on. And you just realize, I mean, a lot of stuff happens at stadiums that doesn't make the news, but a couple years ago there was a guy, as a mascot for some college basketball team, walking on the little road there outside of the Meadowlands in the dark during the Final Four, and he got hit by a car and got killed. So it's like, you know, when it comes to this, I mean, there's so many ways to leave this planet. You know, it just made me think.
This is very cheery.
Yeah, I mean, I bitch and moan about things all the time, but wow, to get out, to leave like that.
No.
It just seems like your whole life led up to that moment.
That sucks.
Yeah. Not like John Adams, boy. He stuck around when he was like 90.
Yeah, even back then.
Falling out, body all falling apart.
About 6 teeth left.
Yeah, he just... He's looking like a scraggly-looking Beethoven now. His hair's going back.
The hair is really funny.
The hair is hilarious. I mean, anyone alive in that century had such a battle with the hair and the stockings and the humidity and the freaking flies. And
yeah.
Meanwhile, they're forming a country. And I can't get a phone to dial. The Block Talk Radio. And
that's
that upsets me.
That's right.
Wow.
Hey, remember Patty, who was on the show, the Yakko Ball lady?
Yakko Ball, yeah. Actually, we now have a Yakko Ball that my son will begin to inflict the cats with tomorrow.
There you go. Well, she sent some to Kellyanne, and she's using them at the school.
Oh, cool.
Yep. And I believe she was sending some to Green Chimneys, where I used to work there. And
the Yakko lady is the Yakko seed.
She really follows through and
she spreads the Yakko wherever she goes.
Yeah. Pretty cool of her.
Yeah. Well, it's nice when you have an idea that works. We wouldn't know anything about that.
Well, maybe we will one of these days.
Somewhere over the rainbow.
Oh, my.
That's right. Cue the Sinatra.
I don't know. I'm a little flat today. I need a little...
You're a little? Jeez, my God.
I need a little something to pick me up.
Like a train wreck.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe this will work. Hold on a second.
No, I got one.
Oh.
Play.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Not playing?
Oh, I thought it was. I hit it. Oh, my God.
What? Did it crash?
No, nothing like that.
You're watching the game.
The Rangers just gave up the tying goal. They can't make anything easy. They've now blown 3 leads in 2 hours.
Great.
There's a giveaway behind the net. Devil centered it. Bounces back to the point. Safe stick handles, throws it in front, and rattles in and off the post. Sure, who that was? 27. Some defenseman, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, he's standing in the crease here. I don't understand this. Oh, there it goes. Destined. Anyway.
Well.
Did that thing play? I guess it didn't play.
No.
What the heck's wrong with this thing?
Do you want a list?
No.
We suck so bad tonight.
Let's see. Well,
oh,
point.
What a maroon. What an ignoramus.
That one played.
Yeah.
That's
a good one.
That actually sounds like Bugs was here with us.
Hey, wait a minute. Here's a good one. Let's see if I can get this one to work. Oh, my God. What
that
the hell?
That was pretty loud.
That was way too loud. This thing is just adjusting like hell. I had to shut it. Try. Let's see.
Let's set a tone here since we're so flat and disinterested.
Can I go take a nap?
Our five live listeners are probably going, "What's wrong with these two?" Is that we've done a lot of little redecorating over on the Naked Summer Network.
Yep.
And you can find archives of our lovely shows from mid to late September through the end of the year up there with such guests as Alexis Tyler and Peter D'Adamo was in there and,
mm-hmm.
of course, the great Bartlett.
Ugh.
And we had Unity Stokes there from Organized Wisdom. So,
yeah.
There's a couple, really kind of A-list people we had on there. And, I'm kind of proud of that we actually stuck around long enough to get some people on the show. And next week we're actually going to have Joe Bleep on Tape Delay,
the Traveling Tape. Yep.
Just agreed to join us on the show next week. He's got something going on the East Coast at the end of the month, and we'll get him on and talk about that and
mm-hmm.
rip apart the entire bleep map, hopefully spare some people some pain. I can create my reality. That is the most redundant statement. It's almost like new beginnings. I'm making a new beginning. Dummy. They mean the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to create reality. It's already here. That always bugs me. Anyway.
Heavens to Murgatroyd.
Yeah, there you go. Well, it's cartoon night here on this show, apparently. Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm.
13 minutes to go down there in Manhattan. Rangers clinging to a 3-3 tie. And my agenda is about to hit the ceiling. The Mets are winning, though. So, we can just transition to another sport.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I can just keep moving the misery along. And if I get really depressed, I can just pop in the Giants DVD. They
mm-hmm.
won that game.
Mm-hmm.
Boy. 646-478-4847. Dare to call this show tonight. We are in the midst of an Anto week, in case you haven't noticed, and these are two flat ecos completely beat about the head as we ramp up to the Now you're getting goofy. See if it was, one of mine will work.
Personally, I think the guy's a phony.
The best voice in the world.
That is the best.
Imagine being Mel Blanc and being drunk.
Oh, he was the best.
Like the Jonathan Winters went insane because all the voices he can do.
Yeah.
They put him in the Laughing Academy.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, here's the way you sound at the beginning of the show. See, it'll play now.
Bueller. Bueller. Bueller.
He's sick. My best friend's sister's boyfriend's brother's girlfriend heard from this guy who knows this kid is going with the girl who saw Ferris pass out at 31 Flavors last night. I guess it's pretty serious.
Mm. Uh-huh.
That's actually in a quote war with one of my clients today with the movie The Pope of Greenwich Village.
Hmm. Oh.
Another 80s movie.
I see we have a caller.
They took my thumbs, Charlie. Yeah, so now we're going to talk movies and all kinds of fancy stuff with our guests here.
Are we ready? Where's
live the... from the Rotunda. Yes, let's get the horn going. And
hold on, let me get the thing. Do you know what?
In a 3-3 hockey game, let's talk movies.
Here we go. Wait a second. The stupid freaking Vista. Slow. Ugh.
I can get her on. I got the thing.
Wait a minute. Wait.
Oh, there we go.
Okay, let's see if that worked. Are you here?
I am here.
Yay!
All right, Carissa, thanks for sparing us and getting us out of the doldrums that we're in here. We've been kind of mucking along every 10 minutes with all kinds of just, I don't know what, just kind of
always
yoke.
Welcome to
hell. A little insanity.
Yeah, Carissa Starr is her little bio here. She's an aspiring screenwriter and novelist and the writer of the blog Earthbound Misfit. So,
I at the end, yes.
Misfit I?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Misfit I, okay.
Misfit I, yes.
Didn't see that, okay. So why don't you tell us about
quotes.
The blog first?
Yes, absolutely. You were speaking of quotes. I was going to say the title of the blog is a quote from a Pink Floyd song, actually.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Cryptic Eco Hour has begun.
Mm-hmm. Three ecos for your listening
yes.
pleasure.
If anyone can understand what we're saying at 10 o'clock, call us, because we're not going to make any sense.
The usual conversation with me.
Yeah, exactly. It's in our heads. Now we're going to spit it out of the blog talk.
Oh, it's going to be scary.
So what motivated you to start, typing into the clouds?
Mostly, I had such a passion for movies, and I have a lot of friends who don't watch them as frequently as I do or don't have the same taste that I have. So I think they got bored with me, and I just needed an outlet to keep talking, to keep... just jabbing my jaws about the movies that were just really exciting me and what I liked about them and what I didn't like about them, which is something that, usually in movie critiques and reviews, you just hear oh, thumbs up, thumbs down, and that just really didn't do it for me because it doesn't tell me why it wasn't good or why it was fantastic. So,
mm-hmm.
What is it about movies that, and of all the things in art that you found the most compelling? Well, why movies?
Because it's all art, actually. That's what really excited me and does excite me about movies is that it's not just one art form. It's all art forms. It's, performing arts, obviously, but it's
uh-huh.
photography. It's, there's fashion design. There's, just everything.
Yeah, music's in there. Yeah, you're right.
It's in there.
Uh-huh.
And so it's great because I come from a family that's very eclectic. There's a lot of musicians, but, my mom used to draw, and my dad liked working with his hands. And, so you kind of got a little bit of everything as I was growing up, and I tried everything. And, I did a lot of drawing, and then I did painting. And, and then when I got older and could use a camera, I was, got into that. And, of course, we were in dance and music and everything else. So I just kind of reached a point where I was like, okay, well, how can I use all of it? And that's what excited me about movies. And I just jumped for it.
So you say you're aspiring a screenwriter. Were you actively trying to write movies, or?
Yeah, actually, I have several scripts that I've written, and I just kind of, it's one of those avenues that a lot of people talk about, like, oh, I'm going to be a screenwriter, but, you know, I went to film school, and they kind of skipped that part, you know, which seems really silly, because without a script, you can't make a movie, you need the story first, and, you know, the school that I went to, you know, we had this one little screenwriting class, and it was, you know, it felt like you were writing commercials. You weren't really getting into the story or the craft of it all, and they certainly didn't go into, well, this is what you do then. You know, this is where you take it. This is who you show it to. This is how you do that. And, you know, so I'm just kind of trying to figure all that stuff out now on my own, which is interesting.
Is it one of those things, because it seems like with the YouTube generation and the ability, like I always think of Clerks and some other people that just kind of grass-rooted it, does it seem like the odds of getting that movie made have gone down because of the fact that there's so many outlets between art house movies and independent movies and, you know, small movies that go straight to DVD, and just to get, you know, basically get your feet wet between, you know, Project Greenlight, and it just seems like they're giving people that have, you know, less access to the industry, more avenues to get their information out there. So there's all these little, festivals now that feature these kinds of movies, and they seem to have even just shorts, things like that, movie shorts, that people can start basically from the kitchen table, and, you know, not so much they're going to be like the guy from, Sleepless in Seattle, and just, you know, or Good Will Hunting, which was just like, you know, first time movie writer to make it big.
Good Will Hunting, you know, my friends hear me say this all the time, especially in response to the fact that, you know, I mean, that and the recent film Juno, you know, yeah, these were first time screenwriters, and you know, and Good Will Hunting was very inspiring for me. I mean, Matt Damon and Ben Affleck were 24 and 25 when they won the Oscar for that,
right.
And that was just awe-inspiring. I mean, I'd never heard of anything like that. I was like, oh, my God, somebody under 30 won an Oscar for something, you know? And, you know, so, yeah, that kind of stuff really does, it gets everybody out there, and it gets you working, and it gets you going. And there are all these little, you know, different ways that you can get started. I mean, I think some things like YouTube, they're kind of like a false hope, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, it gives younger people the idea, oh, well, if I, you know, put this out there, somebody's going to see it, you know, and it's kind of that, well, if you stand on the street corner, somebody might see you. You know, it's not, you know, there's so much going on. You know, you still need to really kind of, there's a lot of be in the right place at the right time, which is, I think, what YouTube, in a sense, kind of offers. Is, you know, be in the right place at the right time. If you can really market yourself, which is, you know, this isn't really films, but, you know, Dane Cook, that was really his big thing. That was how he really got to be where he is. You hear a lot of people saying, oh, well, is Dane Cook really funny? Or does he just really know how to market himself? And that's kind of the anomaly.
He used YouTube, you say? Is that how he did it?
He did MySpace and YouTube. He did
MySpace,
all that kind
right.
of stuff. And you know, it's a way of getting your name out there so that people hear your name. So that's good, but it still requires a lot of work. And that's a lot of, you know, people, younger people especially, you know, they think there's this idea that, you know, we're going to just step outside of, especially if you go to college, you're just going to step outside the door and have a job. You know,
mm-hmm.
you're just going to become famous. And one of my absolute favorite quotes is in the film Fight Club, where he says, you know, we've all been raised to think we're going to be movie stars and rock gods, and we're just starting to figure out that we're not, and we're really, you know, peed off. And it's kind of true, I think, especially my generation and younger. We kind of like, there's a lot of this false hope out here and this idea, oh, you can be famous, you can do this, you can do that, and it's easy, and it's not. It's still a lot of work. And the, you know, the festivals, you know, it's the same old story that it's always been.
Uh-huh.
It's all networking. You really need to get into a group, start meeting people, talking to people. And, you know, sure, there's always that lucky star that just kind of shoots out there. But, you know, even if you look at, you know, I can't think of her name at the moment, the writer of Juno, you know, everybody was like, oh, she used to be a stripper. Yeah, she did. But she also wrote a blog for a long time. She put out a book. You know, so she was doing a lot of work.
Well, what does stripping have to do with anything? Who cares?
It's just, exactly.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean,
it only enhances the story if you may. What else does she do? Yes.
A woman taking off her clothes automatically makes everything better.
There you go.
You know what?
You know.
If every story was led with that, if, you know, and this artist was formerly a stripper, I mean, you know, it worked for Anna Nicole for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah,
but I just think, like you were saying before, you know, the tendency to have this sort of obsession with being famous. I think that's a lot of it has to do with the reality show medium that's pretty much gone amok. In the last,
yeah,
like 5 or 10 years. I really thought after 9/11 we didn't need any more reality.
I agree.
You know, and I thought like shows like Survivor, we can't fake, put people in the middle of the Amazon, you know, and dangle snakes over them, not feed them for a month. I mean, don't we have enough real horrible things happening with
right.
the end? So it's gotten worse. I mean, we've now created, we follow every celebrity's inner life till they fall apart, you know, and Danny DeBonaduce and the Osbournes and then recently the Hogans. And it's like, it just seems like almost like a slaughterhouse is in terms of careers. And then, of course, once they fall apart and are on the D-list, then they show up on the fat thing, the celebrity fat thing, and... It's just a big conveyor belt.
The Surreal House, or
yeah. They go, they're at the Surreal House. All right, exactly. So it's like a big, like almost like a conveyor belt of moving people through the system. And I just feel like we've gotten to the point where being famous is not as far away for people as the whole idea of actually having something to do once you are famous, like.
Right.
A guy like George Clooney, famous guy, but really, you know, really active guy. Richard Gere, same thing. Some other guys, not so much. You know, just you can see like, you know, they don't know what to do with their platform, and they're, you know, I think of the poor tortured Tom Cruise, for example.
Huh? Or they're content not to do anything. I mean, I think there's a lot of people who have really bought into the whole, you know, and I can't believe I'm going to say this, but the whole bling idea of in society that, you know, life is all about amassing wealth and that, you know, that's what makes you a big person and an important person. And it's interesting if you look at the trends in film from the very beginning of filmmaking till now, it really is a marker of what is important in society and
mm-hmm.
how we are viewing society at the time. You know, in the very beginning, you know, the early films, I mean, most of the silent films are Westerns, you know, and they're hero stories. And it's always the good guy always wins, you know. And that was in a time period, you know, in the early, you know, 20th century, we had two incredibly huge wars. Most of the world was destitute. I mean, we were just not in a good place. So the hero tale was just this awesome thing to see on a screen every day, and it just took you outside of reality. People didn't want reality. They wanted, you know, the hero.
Well, the movie was the escape house. I mean, you went there to escape the world because the world was really pretty damn miserable. Now, you go there, and if they don't blow up something in the first 10 minutes of these summer blockbusters, it's like you're not getting your money's worth. They want all that money on the, you know, every pop on the stage there.
Yeah.
And
you know,
I just But then when they get old, we make them governors.
Yeah. Or presidents.
Or presidents.
That's right.
President, you know.
This is true.
Yeah. And, but, I mean, Hollywood, there is a lot of politics. So these guys, you know, people like George Clooney and Richard Gere, you know, they are being primed, you know, for positions like that because they're already out there. They're doing the things that our politicians should be doing.
Uh-huh.
But,
yeah, it's funny. I found that, did you see that story? I don't know if you saw the story in up here. Our governor, our new governor, because in New York we change them often. They did his tax returns, because it was last year before. He made about $300,000, and his donations to charity were donating $150 worth of clothes. Okay? Now,
mm-hmm.
now, as the governor, you know, you're asking people every day to give the charitable. It's almost like he never expected to be seen. I think there's a lot of accidental popularity, too. I mean, the people that didn't want the limelight and all of a sudden got it, and their lives are ripped to shreds by the machine. I see it, you know, think of all the also-ran presidential candidates that didn't have the funds to defend themselves when the media kind of just started to dissect their lives. And I kind of feel like that happens a lot in some of these news stories and things like that. They become movie-like in a way because they become sort of soap opera-esque. And you know, it changes them forever. I mean, I always think back to one of the original ones was Donna Rice in the 80s with the whole monkey business thing with Gary Hart, you know. And she was a smart, professional woman that was you know, you never heard from her again. She completely disappeared. Where some of the other ones, it's almost like the reality show. They bring them back. It's like Puck. They bring back Puck a lot, you know, on the MTV one, Real World. And like, they'll recycle them. So, like, what did you think of it as someone who's studying the media this way? Like, Chelsea Clinton, 10 years later, having to answer questions about the Lewinsky stuff. Is that just art imitating life, life imitating art? How does that whole loop work for you as someone who's sort of on the, you know, on the inside of this?
Well, I think, you know, throughout history, you know, people always want to think, oh, well, art is imitating life, or, you know, but it's really a symbiotic relationship, you know. It's not really, there is a constant feeding cycle from one into the other, into the other. And I think that, you know, part of it is people have a need for nostalgia, I think, and that's why I think a lot of these people get pulled up from the past on a regular basis. You know, like our current president, the scandals and the just animosity people have for everything that's going on now, let's go back to what we thought was the worst thing that could possibly ever happen and the horror that we felt over that, or at least some people felt over the Lewinsky thing. You know, that was such a simpler time then. You know, so we pull her up now and we're like, oh, well, let's talk about it, you know, in a more reasonable manner than we did then. You know, so it's kind of it's almost like a, you know, it's like a form of denial. It's saying, okay, well, we're not going to think about the horrible things going on here. Let's look at back at this and, you know, it's not so bad. It's kind of like the constant obsession over, you know, Kennedy's assassination. It's kind of like, oh, here's this absolutely horrible thing that happened in the past, but we can focus on that.
I got a new obsession on
rather
that.
Rather than
that
focusing
thread
on what's happening now.
Marilyn Monroe's sex video now is the new obsession on that thread.
Uh-huh.
We keep digging. We keep finding stuff. I mean, I think the perception is the past is so tame and ordinary and simpler than what's going on right now that we tend to turn to the past, you say this nostalgia button, as a way to sort of get back our sense of authority over the present. Because if the present is overwhelming, then the past seems to be where you can kind of get your grip again and then kind of forge ahead. We never seem to learn from the damn past. It seems to kick our ass every day. And that's why a lot of these old movies, you know, especially when it comes to guys that sort of play characters of themselves, like Pacino and some of these other ones.
Harrison Ford, who's always excellent at Harrison Ford.
Yes, exactly. I mean, they're stereotypical. I just find them hilarious. And how many more, comic book movies are we going to make? Have we worn out the entire catalog of Marvel and DC yet? I mean,
no, absolutely not, because we always need a hero. And the thing is mm-hmm. you know, heroes like Superman, who come from a time period that is nostalgic, you know, I mean, they tried to resurrect him with, you know, I can't even think of the name of it. Superman.
Which one?
Yeah. The newest one with Brandon Routh. You know, they tried to resurrect Superman again, you know, because they thought, well, who's more heroic than Superman? No one's more heroic than Superman. But it didn't quite fly. You know,
no, no.
Really,
again, we've
horrible.
Gotten to the anti-hero part now. Now it's Cloverfield.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. What we're falling into is, you know, we're kind of going into a new neo-noir period. You know, we need, you know, the real world is so dark for us that the idea of someone so goody-two-shoes and perfect like Superman is just absurd. So what we need is Wolverine. You know, the guy who doesn't shave and rips people to shreds with knives that shot out of his hands. You know, I mean, what's more heroic than that? You know, because he can be a bad guy, but he's a good guy. He's fighting for the good guys, you know? So that's what we need is that anti-hero, because anything else is just too saccharine, you know, that it's not believable. We can only suspend disbelief so far. I think is what it is. And that is just that one step over the line, you know, that we can't.
Yeah,
you
want to see the flaws. You want to see the dark side of the character to give him depth. And if you don't see that, then you don't. The character's not believable. So as we used to say, we go to the movies for an escape. Now we almost go to the movies to sort of confirm reality, you know, and we reward the ones that are, like, the more real the character is, then the more popular the movie gets, and that's why maybe Juno was popular.
Yeah. And it's, you know, we like to see simple lives on screen. So you have this dichotomy, because you have the really simple life films like Juno, where the biggest tragedy in that film is that a teenage girl got pregnant. Well, name a century in the history of mankind where that hasn't happened, you know? And so it's not this overwhelming disaster, you know? So it's a nice, simple film. It's something for us to relax in and go, oh, I know someone.
Time out, Carissa. I got a little surprise for us here. That's a crowd. Little song. Okay.
Aye.
Rangers are up 4-3, less than 5 minutes to go. What a reality, anyway. But my sort of, like you're saying, it's a dichotomy. I think the simple part is sort of the vegetable coating on the pill to make us say, okay, I could grasp this guy. I could take this character in. But when you take a complex character like Tony Soprano, okay, why did he stay popular over the course of what that show that had no continuity? They took off for months, years, you know. And yet his persona and all the deep-seated things about him remain sort of constant, even though he was a completely stereotypical, completely biased, really dark, evil guy, sociopath even, also ego.
That's right. That's why, because he was ego.
He was ego. And so he had this empathic quality, and those sessions with Melfi. Now, Percival has experience with... sort of the evasive sape, we'll just call him the, you know, that sort of person that goes to therapy because the bar's not open yet and they want someone to talk to.
Uh-huh.
Really not trying to solve the problem, maybe marinate it a little bit. And so you look at the course of his entire, healing process, for lack of a better word, with Melfi, and at the end she goes, I can't help you. Now, she could have said that the first 5 minutes of the first show. But it took, you know, and the way the show ended, what did you feel about that as a blogger? Here's a show that has all these episodes, all this drama, all this intrigue, all these cliffhangers, death is looming around every door, and we end with Journey. How did you feel the way David Chase kind of ripped us off there?
I agree with everyone that, yeah, he definitely dropped the ball on the ending of that. I mean, I think he almost felt too much pressure.
Well,
what's
the pressure? It's a TV show.
Well,
is he splitting atoms
iconic.
Here?
See, that's the thing. It became iconic. So the show in and of itself was almost this living thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So if you treat the whole show like we treat any celebrity, it's kind of like, you know, when you finally meet a celebrity face-to-face, somebody that you know, have always been in awe of, you know, a lot of times you step up to them and you're just like, wow, you're a person. You know, because we build them up to be this big thing. And I think the same thing happened with that show. It became this living thing, and he just could not live up to the expectation. No matter what the ending of that show was, I think that it would have been a disappointment to most people because it was a cathartic thing. This was more than just escapism. This was catharsis. This show allowed people in their minds to do all the things they always wanted to do. You don't like your boss? Pop him in the back.
Exactly.
I'm completely serious.
It was a visceral, like,
hour.
Yeah.
It was therapy.
Uh-huh.
And so in a way, I think the end of the show was kind of making a statement in the way that it said, you know, really, no, I can't help you because you're always going to feel this way. This is what you're always going to want to do. You're always going to do these things because you have no boundaries now. So in a sense, it was making a statement, but I think statements like that a lot of times fall flat. They're not made way over the top.
Well, if you're telling a story, you have to have an end. I think there was a lot of political intrigue with that leave it open for the movie, you know, all that stuff. We love the show Deadwood, first of all.
Oh, yes.
Big fans of the show Deadwood on HBO.
I've had the opportunities. Oh. I've heard they say the F word a lot, though.
Oh, yeah, well, that and a whole bunch of other ones.
The Old West.
Do you have any Al handy there, first of all?
Let me take a look here. If I didn't have Vista, my screen would move when I touched it, but let me see.
Nothing like Al.
Here.
Right. But here's a show that was supposed to have a 3-year run, and it only got a 4-year run, only got 3, I forget what it was. And then last year, the same damn director puts out another great show, Jonathan Cincinnati, and they canceled that.
That was just, ugh.
Which was horribly cruel. You know, and now I'm watching this John Adams thing. At least they told me up front, look, only seven nights.
And that's it. Oh, I got something.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, let's see. Here you go. All right.
Come on, Al.
Come on, Al. Speak to me. Hold on. I clicked.
There's nothing better than Al Swearengen. He gets us through the day, but practically.
That's right. Yeah, this is nice. It doesn't...
Another non-fire?
It doesn't want to... Here, wait, let me try this one.
Unbelievable.
Let's see.
Yeah, you know, like, they moved the show Dexter from Showtime to CBS,
you're
right?
Good.
Here we go.
Oh, let me... Wait, here. Here you go.
What the hell is going on?
Not exactly Al Swearengen there.
Everything is playing. There were like 4 things playing.
Got a mind of its own.
I give up.
All right, well, I'll check it out.
Write this down and send it.
I'll find out in a minute. We got 40 seconds here.
God.
But, I mean, what do you make of the these shows that have their own little niche audience? I mean, there was a show, Dead Like Me, a couple years ago.
That was a great show.
Unbelievably great show.
Yeah, it was...
They sort of fall through the cracks and they're gone. And I just, what do you make of the arc of these shows? I mean, the whole jump the shark mindset, you know, from Fonzie.
Well,
is it just the culture just turns its eye to something else? Or?
No, it's not even that. Because like you said, you know, I mean, these are shows that there are people out there that watch them. I mean, if we can sell them in these huge DVD sets of the entire series, I mean... I watched the first 3 seasons of Lost on DVD. I never saw a single episode on television.
Uh-huh.
You know, and so there's definitely people out there that these shows appeal to, but producers are very, very simple creatures to understand. It's all about money. And if they're looking to make the next Sopranos, which is how they, you know, they think this way.
Yeah, they tried on that.
You know, say they're the one that put out, you know, Dead Like Me or, you know, whatever. That show doesn't do as well in the first season as The Sopranos did. Oh, well, this one's going to tank. This isn't going to be the huge bomb hit that I want. So they fulfill whatever contract they made, and then they drop it.
It just seems like it's with films,
you know, it's the exact same thing. I mean, that's why you see Michael Bay and Jerry Bruckheimer making the same formulaic, you know, crap.
They sort of appeal to these... Well, the archetypes never go out of style. Like you said, the hero and all that stuff. And like, you take a show like we talked about Sopranos, Danny, look at the way Seinfeld ended with them sitting in the jail cell with the whole Mobius strip thing.
That was a series that I felt went on way too long. And you know, and I mean, obviously, I feel that Sopranos went on far longer than it really needed to as well. But that's the thing, you know, television's very different from film because, you know, with film, you have 2 hours, sometimes 3, if you can make a film that will engage people that long, you can go that long. Most directors or producers, I mean, are looking for 90 minutes to an hour. You know,
right.
I mean, they don't want anything longer than 2 hours because people aren't going to sit that long. That's
this just
idea.
In.
People
just
won't
in.
Sleep it's too long. You know? And the Rangers are
going to win Game 4. There you go.
You know, you and the freaking sports.
Ah, minty fresh.
Yeah. Hey,
I feel 6'1.5" tall.
Well, there you go.
My actual height.
That's right. All right, let me see if this one is going to play now.
Okay, yeah. Get Al in there.
Let's see. All right, I've hit the button. And got a lot of silence.
You know, you, when you do this and it doesn't fire, it disappoints everybody. So.
You know.
No pressure. Where is it?
I don't know.
No, I mean, where is it on the thing?
Under Deadwood. And I hit the friggin' thing and...
Well, your Vista is up my bippy tonight with this thing.
This is the worst operating system ever.
Well, the switchboard?
I can hear my husband laughing in the other room. He's a computer guy, and as soon as you said missed. I can hear him laughing. He
well,
probably slam his hand on his desk.
Well, those commercials.
I'm sure.
The commercials with the yoga lady cracking.
Things a piece of
exactly.
Crap.
Right. Try Pilates.
Yeah, it's the best. Let's see if I can raise the dead wood here. I have Damn You Internet. I can play that. Deadwood. Al announcing his plans. Oh, Al on Life. I'll play that.
That's the one I was trying to play.
And Fire. Well, it says stop like it should be playing.
Right. You know what?
Nothing.
I can find it, though. While you guys are chatting, I'll find it somewhere else. Because now I'm pissed off and I'm determined to play
now,
that one tonight.
Must, yeah, now it must be played at all costs.
I'm ontoing and
It seems like the switchboard's only interested in playing cartoon characters tonight.
Interesting.
Yeah, let me see if I can get a Daffy Duck to play.
Yeah, I bet you can.
Let's see. This is what we do sometimes when we're absolutely just completely at a loss with this Blog Talk thing. You should get a Blog Talk show. You'd have a lot of people listening to you.
Yeah, it would be fun.
Yeah.
Oh, see, I find that amusing because all my friends and my family are always like, you talk too much.
Well,
you talk too much. No.
That's why I started writing.
so you'd shut up?
How about anybody having to listen to me?
Oh, geez.
Throw me a frickin' bone here. I'm the boss. Need the info.
Not
right.
Quite Daffy Duck, but.
No. Oh, here. I think I found it on YouTube here. I can play
right,
it real
then.
Quick. Let's see if this will play.
Ah, boy.
Okay. That's good. My computer. Hold on. This effing computer.
We spent the last, 5 days trying to get 25 minutes of video up on Google Video. I think we passed 2 kidney stones. I had 4 aneurysms. My tongue at one point dislodged itself from my hyoid bone and was dangling below my knee.
That's right.
And now it's sort of up there, but you can't use it.
That's right. All right, here we go. Ready?
Go ahead.
I don't want to talk to these cocksuckers, but you have to. In life, you have to do a lot of things you don't fucking want to do. Many times, that's what the fuck life is, one vile fucking task after another. But don't get aggravated. Then the enemy has you by the short hair.
Like that?
Oh, God.
That is so good.
See, knowing Al as well as the two of us do, that's like your crazy uncle just came on the air.
That is the best.
Gave you the gospel. You know,
we touched on
a couple of memes. I really want to get to this because this is something that I read a lot of your reviews and I chuckle because I basically don't sleep. you don't believe me.
No,
I am a regular reader of your blog now because you have that eco-ness that I need at between 3 and 6 in the morning, where I don't want
to
face the next.
Well,
it's the dark time. You know, I don't want to face the rest of the day. So what's Carissa riffing about? Let's take a look. And I've been regularly reading. And the things that I really wanted to get on was comedians, especially guys that have a little bit more of a history. Like my favorite lately is Carlin. I've been listening to a lot of Carlin, and their influence during an election year. Because you look at Jon Stewart, you look at these guys, they've become sort of the thumbs up or thumbs down on a lot of the coolness of any given candidate. And when you watch a John McCain not get it that it's Raymond McCain thing was a joke,
yeah.
You know, an Obama girl, and other things going on, what do you make of that zeitgeist? I mean, I talk about that movie, too, before you get out of here. In terms of what does it say about the culture and what does it say about the people that are doing the pontificating as far as how did the comedians get such cultural clout? Letterman, all these guys.
Well, because they're being honest in a way that isn't, it's not as painful. You know, you can be, you have that one relative who's brutally honest, will tell you the absolute truth, doesn't candy coat anything, and they're doing it to love you, but it doesn't come across that way, and you're just like, oh my God.
Uh-huh.
Well, the comedians, what they do is they're telling you the truth, but they're able to candy coat it in that way that makes you laugh because you're like, oh God, if I don't laugh at this, I'm going to be depressed, you know? And I think that comedians have always, we've always had comedians, you know, the king always had the jester, You know, he always had his court jester, and the court jester would make fun of the king, right in front of the king. But everyone would laugh. It was okay, because he was a jester. You know, a lot of people look at shows like, you know, South Park got a lot of flack for being, you know, so offensive.
I love that show.
I absolutely love that show, and I was having a conversation recently with someone of the difference between a show like that and some of these other, like, sketch comedy type shows where they're doing the same thing. I mean, it could be the same script taken right from a South Park episode, and they're just reenacting it with live people, and it won't be funny. And it's not funny because the cartoon puts it in a context where you're like, okay, I'm watching a cartoon. This is something that is not meant to be taken serious. Plus, you've got a group of kids. These are fourth grade kids. You know, so anything that comes out of the mouth of babes, you know, it's truth.
Yep.
But it comes from children, so, you know, we got to laugh at it.
Well, same thing with Bart, right? Bart stays
right?
10 years old forever.
Exactly. Uh-huh. You know, Pee Wee Herman was the same thing. If you ever saw any of his stand-up stuff, don't think about the movies or the kids show. That's what he became. What he started as a stand-up comic. He had his own traveling show, and if you saw his shows, he was vulgar. He talked about politics. I mean, he put out stuff that, you know, we wouldn't have expected to hear from him now, because now we think of him as a kid show host, and that's what he became. Bob Saget's the same thing. The guy that we associate with Full House. You see him on stage, he's the most vulgar comedian.
And he's not funny. I never found him funny, his stage act.
No.
There's some guys that just can't, it's like they're trying too hard to be dirty.
Yeah.
And
well, I think it's a culture thing.
I
know that sounds stupid. It's a cultural thing. Comedians have their own culture.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's what it is. I mean, you know, you see a lot of these comedians on their TV shows and their movies and those types of things. Even when they get really big and they start doing, like, Broadway, nothing like what they started with.
Look at a career. You know, is Robin Williams looked at as a comic actor anymore, or is he looked at as a guy that just can do a whole range of characters? Well, Tom Hanks, same thing. He could do comedy and he could do serious stuff. I think, just like before, you were saying that we don't want our heroes to be one-dimensional. I don't think we want our comedians to be one-dimensional. Even Adam Sandler tried some serious roles. You know, and a couple of them he did pretty good. I just think that, and especially when you're dealing with ones that have sort of, like I said, this sort of exterior persona, it's like Dennis Miller now has crossed over to become a political commentator, right? With this whole right-wing neocon, act-cha-cha.
Yeah.
I listen to him when I'm driving around. I'm like, I want to be him. I could crack a joke. This is not effort for him. He's not throwing to clubs and trying to get... See, this is what we're very mystified by on our side of the phone, because people have talent out there. There's tons of people who have talent. There's so many cattle calls going on out there for all these stupid shows, these American Idol things. And the thing is, a lot of people that have legitimate talent can't get into the structure, because to gather an audience, you almost have to be so outrageous and so extreme to get attention, and then to sustain it isn't really the part of the puzzle. So you're sitting there, you know, you're the aspiring, you know, screenwriter, all this stuff. What is the formula, what is the sort of the architecture of how do you build an audience from scratch? And with all these tools, we just picked up a book. I don't know if you're familiar with the Seth Godin. I call him the Seth Godin because he's kind of an entity to me. He's got a new book. This guy breaks every rule. Every single one of his books has a stupider title than the book before. Okay? This book is called Meatball Freaking Sunday. Meatball Sunday. Big bestseller now, because is your marketing out of sync? And what's a Meatball Sunday, do you ask? Well, the meatballs are your old bricks and mortar, traditional way of advertising, you know, interruption, get on TV, mass media, and the Sunday is all the new social media with the micro marketing for the micro media niches. And you can't take two good ideas and put them together. You create what's called a Meatball Sunday, and it doesn't fly. So, inside of a paragraph or two, he's communicated what would take the straight person who doesn't have that creative talent 300 or 400 pages to articulate, and he just says, you got a Meatball Sunday there. He had a book a couple years ago called An Idea Virus. His original book that made him popular was called The Purple Cow. Uh-huh. It's got to be remarkable. So it's like every single one of his concepts are examples of how he got popular. So it's like he writes a book about, you know, how ideas spread, and he writes it. So the idea of the book spreads. The last book he wrote last year was, I don't even think it was 100 pages, called The Dip. That's it, The Dip. Now, I've struggled, lo these many moons, to sort of put a title on the Partridge Family bus of the work we're doing here with Somatics. I'm just curious, you know, we just kind of got going with you here. Have you checked out any of the stuff that we do at all? I mean, just okay.
Yeah, I have. You know, I think really it's one of those things that, I mean, obviously if there was an easy answer on how to do that,
right,
we'd all be able to do it, you know? And it's the way I look at it, you know, that I think that poker, believe it or not, the game poker is a perfect allegory for, you know, fame in a sense. You know, there is a lot of skill required. You know, any idiot can sit down and learn how to play the game and play the game. But to play the game really well, you need skill. And you need to be able to read people, you need to have money, and you need to know people. And then when you get to the top, you can have all those things, but it still comes down to dumb luck.
Mm-hmm.
That one card that you have absolutely no control over, that gets slapped down on the river, that's the dumb luck. And that's the one key. And it's that one uncontrollable variable that gets thrown in that, you know, I mean, you could sit back. People, you know, debate all the time about this artist or that artist. You know, why are they famous? They're, you know, all their stuff is crap. Or, you know, who wants to listen to his music? He's horrible, you know, whatever. I mean, Van Gogh, he barely made it through life making a pittance on commissions in what few commissions he got. You know, most of his paintings didn't sell for anything until after he was dead. But he's probably one of the most famous, you know, painters. He didn't get that one dumb luck card. You know, he had everything else. He knew people, you know, he knew people, but that one dumb luck card was missing from the table, and he missed his lot. He didn't get that, you know, and that's what it comes down to, you know. I mean, there's all these different variables. Life is, you know, the universal language is mathematics, you know, so you're talking variables. You're talking that one thing that you know, can't always foresee. It's so far out there, you can't see it, you know. So it just comes down to you got to keep playing. You got to keep perfecting what you do. You got to keep getting better, learning different techniques, learning from different people. And, you know, if you do that, you need to meet people. So you got to just sit down at the table and play. That's what it comes down to.
We are definitely in that mode.
We are tortured souls.
Let's take a break every once in a while. You know, when the girl comes around with the tray, you know, get your scotch on the rocks. It's okay. You know, but keep playing your hand. You just got to keep trying.
So as a way of winding down here, from the stuff you saw of the stuff that we do, what sense did you make of it?
Well, I've read a lot of different stuff about psychology and psychiatry, things like that. And I think what fascinated me about, I'm not really familiar with developmental psychology. I think I'm using the term correctly, which is, that is what somatics is, correct? It's the idea
Not really, but we'll go with it.
Then I misunderstood a lot of what I read, I guess.
Well, there is a developmental piece to it. It's not psych.
Right.
Oh, okay.
It's just brains developing.
Brains developing.
Yeah, it's more bio.
Stuff. Yeah. So, I mean, we mentioned at the top of the show that you're an eco, and people that are regular listeners know an eco is someone who peaked in their third year developmentally, and they sort of became empathic, and they have all these other hidden dimensions of their consciousness, and they're very cool people, but they're basically, their signal-to-noise ratio is a little wonky, so they don't follow the straight and narrow, they kind of zigzag all over the place, and it's sort of like having a conversation with a moth. He's in the room with you, but try to get their full attention. That's kind of the eco world, you know. And when people hear those, just like you say, those producers keep tapping on our brains with those archetypes, it's the same thing with these somatic orientations. It's like it's so biologically rooted into us that it's undeniable, it's self-evident. And that's what we're saying. How do you make something like air popular? I mean, they bottled water. How do you bottle a soma? So that's sort of like, you know, from everything, we talk about somatic cinema a lot. And we kind of touched on that a little bit. Maybe we'll get you on to do that again. And I just see your stuff being so, like you said, everything that you write about in your reviews and all your takes on things, You're honest, you're genuine, and you're not going to the formula like the film critic has to do to get their, you know, their 500 words into the space every Friday, you know, whatever it is, and to get their little thumbs up signatures and all that, because that's the Sunday part. That's the sort of the topping, and you're really focusing on the infrastructure, on the felt sense awareness and the value of the things over time. That's why, you know, we wanted you on the show. So, all right, so you get one more shot at us here. What's the one thing you want people to take away from this hour and head over to your blog with, of all the things we covered? What's the one concept you want to leave us with here?
Wow.
Yes, drum roll.
Just take a different look, you know? Every film that you go in to watch, you know, just take a break from your whole life. Just walk into that big, black, empty box and just whatever comes on that screen, don't think about it. Just watch it. Just take it in, you know, because so many people don't do that. And that's, I think that's how you really get the whole experience and you find out different things about yourself by seeing what's on that screen.
Uh-huh.
There are archetypes there and you do identify with them and we try to identify with the wrong ones. We want to try and identify with whoever the director's telling us to identify. But you know what? Sometimes it's that little character that has one or two lines that's going to mean so much more to you than anything else up on that screen. And that's the kind of stuff that I like to look for. That's what I think is most important is to take the whole picture and take it all in. And, you know.
Well, you've motivated me to go look up the movie The Player and watch it again and be everybody. So thanks for coming on the show, really. You've been a treat. And we definitely want to have you on again to bounce your views off of some of the other guests and get you on a little panel, a little zigzag, and we'll shut up and let all the experts talk.
That would be fun.
Yes, and soon you will have your own little page on Naked Soma Nation. We will send you the link, and you could put it on the blog and let your bloggers listen to this interview and comment on it, and this will live forever.
That's right.
So thanks, Carissa, for hanging
thanks,
on here.
Thanks, Carissa.
Thank you for having me.
Later, Eco Sister.
Yes. Via Con Bios.
All right. Shall we hit the Jepster up?
Hit the Jepster. Hurry up.
Here we go, if it plays.
Hi, this is Dr. Thurman for your Naked
Freaking Philo.
this week I was thinking about, you know, we're in an Onto week. Is there anything that's wellness-related to being an Onto or being in an Onto week? And I kind of couldn't come up with anything solid or definitive for that. So rather I just said, you know what? It's springtime, and springtime is this time of transition. Lots of people want to do these cleanses and, you know, do these heavy-duty liver cleanses or colon cleanses. And I'm just here to tell you that there's a place and a time for those things. But if you want to work on something that's a little less intense, a little less jarring to your body and sort of more rhythmic, more wave-like, as we like to be here on Naked Soma Radio, I would recommend just something simple, like one day a week of, you know, mostly light juices, water, fresh raw fruits and vegetables. Just taking it easy on the system once a week, and then using things like hot water with lemon, unsweetened cranberry and water to sort of help flush the kidneys and the liver on a regular and daily basis. And then, you know, if you want to talk to somebody about doing a heavier duty cleanse, that's fine. But in general, just taking that one day a week, picking a day, and kind of take it easy and letting your body do some recovery. So until next time, this is Dr. Jeb with your Wellness Tip of the Week. Bye.
Okay.
All right. Thank you from New Hampshire. Hope the snow is melting up there. There's still snow on the ground a couple of days ago.
Uh-huh.
So we have a minute to go. So the 10-second somascope, because I think we just got some good, cool stuff there with Carissa. That was a great interview for me anyway.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, we're in the outdoor week. We peak on Sunday, the full moon. And this one being the first cycle through, like I said, we're talking about, we're really shedding the fear from the winter going into the anger of the spring. So look for lots and lots of friction as we approach the week, the weekend here. And then coming into next week, Eco Week, just a complete balloon popping, flat on your back, spring break. So basically kind of bear with it for a couple more days. Lay low, be very internal, like she's talking about, be very, very internally creative. And then you can come out of your cave on Monday. So we'll turn it over to Professor Val for her quote, and then we're out of here.
All right. You only have to do a very few things right in your life so long as you don't do too many things wrong. That's Warren Buffett, and that man knows what he's talking about.
Yep. I should have played the gambler instead of this one. No one to hold him.
Uh-huh.
All right. So here we go. Little Van Morrison to take us out. We'll see you next week with Joe Bleep.
That's right.
In his quantum best, on pre-recorded.
Uh-huh.
So for everybody here at Naked Soma, this is Dr. Mark saying travel light through the darkness.
And I'm feeling too tired. Start all over again. 'Cause I know.